break. It's a mini episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of You Gotta Check This Out with Mike and Dre. I'm the Mike with another fresh mini-sode just for you. This week, we talk with Jaina Mistry about creating a Buffy fan site in the 90s. Then, Dre and I attempt to explain the Sheridan-Picard-Shatner Index. I'll see you at the other end.
Karen told me you used to be really involved with Buffy early on and had an early yeah. Buffy site.
I was. So when I was 14, 15 years old, like some holidays were hitting and I was like, I've got nothing to do. And I was like, I'm going to learn computer. I'm going to learn how to computer. And back then that was creating websites. So I learned, self-taught myself HTML, CSS, JavaScript. And the only thing I could think to create was a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan site. So I created a Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan site. I used Flash. I had a guest book. I had a hit counter. Eventually, it went into a Buffy and Angel fan site. And then it got bigger and I was running it. I ran it for maybe like 10 to 15 years or so. And I was also in the convention circuit as well. So I'd go to tons of like Comic Cons and like little Buffy ones, or there'd be like Firefly conventions and I would go to them. And so the website turned into a full-on Joss Whedon fan site, Buffy, Angel, and Firefly. And I turned into like a BNF. I was once upon a time, I was a big name fan. So I would go to conventions and be like, oh, that's Jaina. She runs that website. So the website was called Dusk Till Dawn. I think it was from Dusk Till Dawn at one point. Obviously, vampires, they only stay at night. And it was great. I learned HTML and CSS, bravo. But it was super fun to do. And I made like kind of quite a lot of friends through it. But yeah, I was a big old fan site nerd creator way
That's
back when.
That's great. Is that something that still exists out there? Has remnants on the Wayback Machine or
yes.
anything? Have you gotten to look
if
at
If you
that?
Go nice. On Wayback Machine, I think it was angel-btbs.co.uk. Go on the Wayback Machine and it still exists in some way or form on there. I think when I last looked, the Flash intro was played. So I also had like one of those Flash intros, like skip the intro or watch the Flash intro. I had all of that going for me as well, but it was, it did teach me a lot and it probably got me to the career that I'm at right now. Like I wouldn't have learned HTML and CSS. I wouldn't have been a web developer designer. I wouldn't have been doing email marketing. So my nerddom got me to where I am right now.
That's awesome. Dre and I both have day jobs in programming and development and have similar origin stories from way back then. We're like just playing something and putting something out there just like somehow gets you into the web at that point.
Yeah, it does. Totally does.
Nice. Well, anyway.
And I was going to say, I was able to on archive.or web.archive.org find the way back.
God.
And then, of course, you know, it is a shame. The real site, quote unquote, now has definitely been taken over by a bunch of mobile, yeah. like a mobile game thing. Mm-hmm. And at one point it was taken over by a car reviewer yeah. thing. So you actually have to hop a little back. But no, I actually had to flip by Angel and Buffy in my DVD case. So we were talking pre-show, watching Babylon 5. The streaming era is fun. It's available for free on Amazon. Yeah. 1 minute it's gone, the next it's available on a site, but you have to watch yeah. ads. You know, the best route, as we've recommended on the show, go to your library and see if they have Babylon 5, because there are a lot of old DVDs and they are a delight. And in fact, the episode we're watching, The Geometry of Shadows, does in fact have a director's commentary, or rather an actor's commentary with Bruce Boxleitner, mm-hmm. Jerry Doyle, and Claudia Christian. So that's, you know, it's not, I'm a nerd. I was like, this isn't super informative. It's a bunch of actors having fun. I was like, who wants that? I want behind the scenes info
details.
Like you could have found.
Give me the nerdy details, says Dre.
Yeah, I want to go to a site like Dusk Till Dawn that's going to give me behind the scenes
well,
gossip.
Well, we were invoking Buffy a bunch near the first two episodes. If we ever go back to season one and for some reason do a filler Ooh. Episode, we talked about how the early first like 10 episodes of season one of Babylon 5 were all like Monster of the Week episodes and reminded of that world building build up of the first season of Buffy a lot.
Yeah, that was people give that first season of Buffy a lot of flack, and it definitely hasn't aged well. I rewatched it, I think, maybe last year or the year before, and it hasn't aged well, but that whole structure and the way they do the episodes and the way they like build the characters out and really show through the Monster of the Week format what their motivations are and what their weaknesses are and what they like doing, like there's something very heartwarming about it. Like, mostly because a lot of TV shows nowadays, like straight into the story, there's the world building is through like the narrative of it all. But like there's something very welcome about being able to just jump into an episode and just watch it. And you don't necessarily need to have the history and need to know what's going on, but it helps.
If I may, Mike, if I can briefly stay in Buffy, which by the way, we can put a pin on for a future, you got to check this out, season. I mean, I'm really curious on the aging of things. So we're going to talk this on Babylon 5 too. Mike, were you a Buffy fan as well? Did you like catch it on the first run?
My family was actually watching Buffy at that period of my life when I was just going off to school, like as a freshman in undergrad. So I was kind of not having anything with pop culture for about those 3 years as I was just getting into it. But they had gone and they still were recording every episode of Buffy on VHS. So I would come home visiting from college and like would just pop in random episodes, knowing that like my mom and dad and little sister were so into this vampire show.
Your family is way too right, cool. Yeah. Mike. That's, I don't know if that's allowed.
They always went to Cure concerts too. That was the family band who would go around doing that. So yeah.
But yeah, so the aging of stuff, but I mean, I'm remembering some of season one of Buffy and remembering some of just the creativity as an example. There's an episode where she's fighting a god monster, very similar, by the way, to the infection monster we discussed, Mike. He's like, I can't be killed by any mortal weapon or something. And she's like, yeah, when you wrote that prophecy, we didn't have bazookas. Yeah. I have a bazooka, game over. And like that kind of stuff was like game changing and awesome. So I'm very curious on like, it doesn't, you know, obviously Joss Whedon, we all know the stuff that certain stuff has gotten contrived because everybody has snark, but like, it still feels like there's some very similar to Babylon 5 gems and Buffy that like showed what could be done.
Yeah, that totally. Like I love that episode for that. And like that, I feel like that was like the start of like the, not the start, but like the resurgence of like girl power in TV shows as well. Like there had been like Charlie's Angels and everything back then, but then there wasn't really a TV show that was led by a female character. And like, it's cheesy. So like some of those lines that she said, but it's so much fun. It was in that moment. It was so much fun to hear a woman, a young woman like that, say something like that and fucking kick ass. Like that's what she did. And it was, it hasn't, maybe that scene and maybe that thing hasn't aged very well, but I still get a kick out of it. Maybe that's nostalgia for me as well. Like I get a kick out of it. It's super, super fun thing to see. But I think the clothes, I'm going to put my girl hat on for a second, but the way the clothes has aged is not very great. The way some of the snark, I think, like you said, Jerry, it's like people, that's just how TV shows are scripted now. Like that was like the start of it all, like especially some of the kind of the same style of show. It's nostalgia for me. So the way it's aged is comforting versus like, ew, this is gross.
Yeah, I'd be interested too, like from a storytelling standpoint, because this was about the same time as Babylon 5 or just a couple years after, was it? Because this is also early 90s. How much, do you know how much Joss Whedon had of the entire 5 season? Did he plan each 5 season arc from the beginning or was it just as
it comes? I think, someone can like correct me if I'm completely wrong, but I think he had the first season planned out and they didn't know whether they were going to get renewed at that point. They knew they had one season. And then I think towards the end of that first season, they had, I think, maybe a 2-season renewal. So they knew they had season 2 and season 3. And then they had that arc like to the end of high school. So they knew that they could run the story up until the end of high school. And then season 4 was the start of college. So I think that's why they really leaned on that Monster of the Week. And I think towards the end of it, they leaned more on the storytelling, like the Master and Angel and all of the kind of the stuff that leads on to the later seasons. But yeah, it's, I think TV shows were different back then as well. Like they got 2-season renewals. They got like more than just like, oh, you're getting canceled now. See ya, goodbye. So I think even that's changed.
When we talk the board game mentality, because it seems like you're both big board game nerds, which I love. Mike has this eye to find things in shows and what you just said there, the Sheridan seems like an X, but he's really a Y, like that cheat code you can use in a game where it's like you have to use a mage character, but like, oh, but this mage is buffed on fighter stats. and the way Mike crystallized it, which will be our subject after we get through the previously on, is the Picard Shatner
index is what I'm calling it. Like, I'm taking each episode in our notes,
or rather, right, it would be Picard. Okay. It would be either Patrick Stewart Shatner or Picard.
That's like Sheridan. Yeah.
But yeah,
I'm taking each one of our notes, and I'm giving an index of, well, how much of a Picard was he this episode versus how much of a Kirk was he in this episode, and it varies pretty well from episode to episode how much he like jumps into something.
Oh, but when you're saying that, you nailed it exactly, Mike, where you were saying Santiago caught that and you caught onto it too, which is saying this person seems like a Kirk, but he's really a Picard. And then it is funny, by the way. Because the topic we'll talk is the trade-off. We had this big overarching storyline in season one that was all mysterious. And because they did the actor trade-off and the direction change, Delenn's just like, oh yeah, by the way, this is the thing that was important, that was ominous. Here you go. Let's move on because you're a new character and it doesn't matter as much to you.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
Coming in as a complete newbie. Did they ever explain why they made that shift and change and stuff like that? Like beyond what was in the story, like what was going on behind the scenes?
Yeah, you take this one, Dre. You're more familiar with this.
We discussed it a lot last show, but essentially Michael O'Hare, the key actor, had mental illness and they didn't want to reveal it because they were afraid it would hurt his career and also potentially hurt the show. So JMS subtly writ him off. And then he said behind the scenes, he kept this kayfabe for years saying, oh yeah, we agreed. The plots were too contrived. Michael O'Hare had other stuff we wanted to work on. We agreed we'd revisit it. Luckily enough, he is able to reintegrate Michael O'Hare into the show. So that story half held up. No one really looked too closely. But Michael O'Hare passed recently and JMS basically was able to reveal, yeah, we literally had to write him off of the show. He had mental illness and could not persist on the show. But then that did really knock things because you said you're getting into Deep Space Nine. If you make it all the way through Deep Space Nine, you'll see that Sisko is important end to end. And that was supposed to be Sinclair, who had to get written off after season one.
Oh, wow. So that's the kind of, I know I'm getting a weird tangent again, but that's, again, thinking about how shows age, like I feel like that really wouldn't happen these days. I feel like there's a lot more transparency and visibility around like mental illnesses and people like not being able to get like they, I feel like today they would have just said, hey, he can't continue. There's something going on with him. This is why we have to bring in someone. Maybe I'm living in a dreamland thinking about that.
No, but even with social media, everything around like people saying everything, there's the secrets get out a lot more now than they did back in the early 90s when this happened.
Yeah. I don't want this to come across as blaming, but the irony is things like the big dedicated fan sites kind of led to that, because you're right. Back in the day, Babylon 5 was kind of the start of the Usenet group and the forums. Mike discussed that a lot in season one. And we've reached the point now where if Michael O'Hare, a key actor, left a show, fans would be asking what's going on. They would be checking, where are they checking in? Oh, they were seen here. Mm-hmm. And the reason we'd get the story coming out is like, you just couldn't, because the story, people would break the story. So you would have to do it, and you would have to do it in a positive spin if you wanted the show to keep going. So yeah, bygone era, that would never happen nowadays. Yeah. And it's wild that it did happen. I don't think we need to go that long because we already kind of discussed it, but the Picard Kirk thing you noticed, Mike, I loved this so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the Shatner Picard index is what I called it, just because using the actor's name and then Picard just feels better to me. So Sheridan came in to replace Sinclair. He was appointed by the Bullish Earth Force, thinking that he would be an attack dog for them, when in reality it was, like I said, Santiago who picked him and got him through there. So Sheridan does and needs to present as a Shatner to be accepted by the Earth Force government that's coming in, and to not play off like where his sympathies lie, shall we say, as things go more and more to fascism over to second and third season. But he has to act as a Picard and be able to diplomatically hold situations down. So I think he's a perfect replacement. JMS is able to take story beats throughout the season that he meant for Sinclair, put some of them on Sheridan, but not all of them, as Sinclair comes back a couple times to tie up the couple of loose ends he needs to. But it was nice seeing Boxleitner. Every time. Anyway, yeah, so It was perfect how Tron came in and was able to take over the station.
If that's the easy one, you go for JMS for the creator, you go for Tron for the lead. That works absolutely perfectly.
Yep. Yeah, that's about all I had. But throughout the season, I'll be keeping up those indexes. And when we get to the end of Babylon 5 season 2, I will have an article on MikeSlater.com revealing all of the index points and which way Sheridan did end up tipping over towards more of a Shatner or more of a Picard on the index.
And by the way, very much like we just jumped in mid-season for this, I'm going to jump you in mid to some numbers, to the scoreboard. You don't know what the rules mean. It all makes sense in the future. We've got Shatner 7, Picard 0, Emotion Chip Data 3. That's the current score, according to Game Master Mike. I'm going to have to get some red cards, do some challenges. There's absolutely no way Picard is at 0, Mike. I say that without even knowing the rules, but you're going to need to head over to MikeSlater.com, where Mike does have running articles to go along with this podcast, including my favorite so far, which is the Sucker Punch one, which I haven't even read fully, Mike, I'll be honest, but I'm going to read it fully for content. And Mike is wrong on the Sucker Punch one. So go to MikeSlater.com and then leave notes to Mike on Blue Sky as Slatron, S-L-A-T-R-O-N. We're really seeing the Picard-like nature of Sheridan. Mm. Where he does this a lot, where he finds out what people want and makes sure to deliver it to in a way to get them to do what he wants. He is very manipulative, but in a good way. And it's funny because he is portrayed as this brash shoot 'em up character. That's not really him. He's really more of a like clever diplomat. Whereas Sinclair, who you saw for one episode, he was portrayed as like a monk. But then when you analyze his actions, he's a Shatner. He just sucker punches first every chance he gets.
Yeah, it was, that kind of reminded me of one of my old bosses. He used to be a really good motivator. That was his thing. Like he would motivate you to do things like by like dangling something, but it wasn't manipulative in a bad way. It was manipulative in a way that would be beneficial to you to help you grow. So like when that scene played out, I was like, oh, I feel like I can relate to this way, way too hard. And I was like, oh, that's a bad thing, isn't it? But it felt very real. That I think it's actually moments like that in this episode that made me feel like, oh, I could watch more Babylon 5 because it feels rooted in like this is just how humans operate too. Like this is how they function and how they get along with each other and get people to do what they need to do. And this is life. So I think that was kind of a fun little scene for me to watch. And
Sheridan gets a lot of moments like that where you get to see him not really manipulating his crew is the right word, but it's like really talking to them the right way to get stuff done.
Total Picard, I thought. Like, yeah. When you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that totally is. I could see Picard. If that was a Star Trek scene, I wouldn't have batted an eyelid.
I'll hit this tangent one more time. But when you watch shows, do you do the same thing Mike does? Because it does seem, like I said, going back to the board game, after doing this for two seasons with Mike, like I am amazed, Mike, at your ability to almost see the rules of the universe. I kind of do that. Like I see the structure. I'm a computer scientist. I do that. But it's a little funnier to me because I'll see like the structure and how things flow. And then Mike seems to like look for the rules. And when he says it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that is an unwritten rule of the show. I didn't even think about that.
Well, it's not that. It's that I'm a front end developer and you're back end more. So like I'm about glitz and glam like showing something over this way where you're very rules.
Mike. I'm a full stack developer, which means my front end is garbage and makes you cry. But I claim I can
every back end developer says that.
All right. 10 people in the audience are we're all laughing.
That's
all
more than our audience. Yeah, right? What are you talking about?
All of ours. And that was the question, Jana. Like, do you do the same thing Mike does when you watch? Do you look for rules or do you find any of that seeps in? Or
it depends on the show. So it depends on like if I'm really invested in it, if it feels like a show that is complex and has layers and like is worthy of me to like really think about it time and time again, or if it's just a show that I'm just watching. So like it tends to be mostly sci-fi shows that I'll be like, I don't see it. I don't think as clear as day as like Mike as you do, but it'll take me like a few days. Like, oh, that stretch that always tends to happen. And that is always like their motivation like that, but I'll see it later on. It doesn't necessarily like it takes me. Like when I used to do the Buffy and Angel fan sites, mm-hmm. I spent so much time digging into the episodes, reading episode guides and like watching the episodes 3-4 times. I would see that a whole lot clearer now life is a whole lot busier than a 14, 15 year old girl. Yeah. So like, I don't have the opportunity to like watch an episode 3 or 4 times to actually like see some of this, but yeah, I did way back when.
I tend to compare, like when I'm watching a good show, I watch it like I'm doing improv with music. Cause when you're improvising, it's all motif based. So you're really looking for those motif based, how they come back to a listener's ear, just as both themes and like literal parts of the episode can come back in different ways. Mm-hmm. It's motif, it's call and answer, watch how things answer each other and watch for the conflict, and you'll see patterns in how everybody, like different showrunners, writes. And you're right, there's like certain shows that, oh, that tickles a part of my brain. Who's doing that? And what are they lining up the dominoes? Or is it like, nah, I'm just gonna turn on Supernatural and watch a couple of himbos, you know, make duck faces.
Zing! That's nice. A zinger there.
Nice call it.
And that's all we got for now. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back next Sunday as we move on to Babylon 5, Season 2, Episode 13, Hunter Prey, with special guest Taylor Anthony. Cheers, all.